Good afternoon, everyone. This is David Gross-Kloss, partner with Dorsey & Whitney and part of the firm's public finance practice group, working with a lot of issues with regard to tax-exempt matters for all types of entities. And today, I'm joined by my colleagues, Christina Kuhn, also in our public finance group, and Matthew Pekosh, who's a public finance partner, and he is the 103 tax expert for our public finance group. We're going to talk today just in general about some of the things to keep in mind for those of you that have outstanding tax-exempt bonds and some of the issues that you should be giving some thought to and that you are going to run into as you might be thinking about readjusting rates or terms or maturities or those types of things with regard to some of your outstanding tax-exempt debt. So with that, let me start. Matthew, welcome. And the first question to you, Matthew, is just generally what kinds of things from a tax perspective should our borrowers and issuers be thinking about if they're going to be considering changing terms of their tax-exempt financing documents?
So the tax law treatment of an obligation doesn't necessarily align with state law or securities law. So anytime you're changing the terms of your obligation, you need to consider what the impact will be for tax law purposes. And tax law treats certain changes as creating an entirely new debt obligation. And that's true even without a formal amendment. Anytime you deviate from the original terms of your obligation, it may create a new debt obligation for tax purposes.
So Matthew, when you talk about a new debt instrument, a lot of times folks may hear us refer to that as what's called a reissuance, correct?
Right. So for tax purposes, what generally happens is that this kind of new debt instrument is treated as being issued in a deemed exchange for the original issuance. So it's the reissuance is for tax purposes, the issuance of a new obligation that's issued in exchange for the original obligation.
And so how might some of these things that we refer to as a new debt instrument or reissuance, how might those come about? So things like what, changing the maturity, changing the payment times, things like changing the interest rate, maybe some things like even changing the covenants or rate covenants in the documents, correct?
Yeah, all of the above. Really any kind of change or any deviation from what your original documents say you're supposed to do, any deviation like that could be considered a significant modification for tax purposes and could cause a reissuance. So you really need to look at any change you're making or kind of any deviation you're making from what was originally contemplated and determine whether that under specific tax rules is a modification, and if it is a modification, whether it's a significant modification. And that can result from things like delaying payments or changing the interest rate or yield on the instrument. It can even result from changes in certain other covenants. Not every change will be significant and cause reissuance. There are some changes you can make that will not have the kind of reissuance consequence. But you really need to look at the specific facts and the specific change that you're thinking about.
Chris, I think you had a question for Matthew.
And yes, as a follow-up to that, Matthew, for example, if we have a 20-year maturity on a bond, and what we're getting questions about are let's say a waiver of principal for the next 2 months. Without any other facts, would that be something that would trigger significant or minor modification that would trigger reissuance?
That would generally not be a significant modification. There is a safe harbor for delays in payments, and that safe harbor is quite generous, actually. It's 5 years, or I should say it's the lesser of 5 years, or 50% of the original term of the instrument. So something like a two-month delay in principle would not be significant. Those changes are cumulative, though. So if you did 2 months now and then another year, you'd have to add those together and kind of keep a running tally against your safe harbor. It's worth mentioning a lot of times there may be associated changes with that delay, and things like consent fees could also change the yield. They might be taken into account for the yield, and that would not be covered by the safe harbor for the delay in payment. So you really need to consider not just the immediate change, but what kind of other associated changes might be happening.
So a consent fee would be a charge for in exchange for the waiver. Is that what you're referring to?
Right, so the consent fee would be taken into account when you're determining what the yield on the modified instrument is. And so now you've also changed the yield, not just the payment schedule. And if you're changing the yield, then you need to evaluate whether you've changed the yield in a significant way.
In a lot of what we're talking about, what's the most important takeaway for those considering modification of the amortization schedule or changing the underlying security or a covenant with regard to their bond documents?
I think the most important takeaway is that the tax law doesn't necessarily align with the way you might think about the obligation, and that you should really talk with bond counsel about any changes that you are thinking about making to determine whether those particular changes would be significant modifications for tax purposes.
Because in the end, what we're protecting against is the loss of the tax exemption on the bond. Is that really what we're protecting against?
But possibly. If there is a reissuance, because it's treated as a new bond being issued, you normally have to treat it just as you would any other refunding bond. So that means, in order for your modified bond to kind of retain tax exemption, you would, at a minimum, need to file a new 8038. But you'd also need to do things like make sure that you do a rebate calculation for your deemed refunded bond. And really anything else that you would be doing or thinking about in a refunding context.
So I'll just add a little piece to that as well. Things like when you do an original issuance, you may have to consider holding new hearings for tax purposes. But I would just add, you may also need to have some considerations about what you might need to do under state law authorization statutes. And then also within the context of the documents themselves that you're considering amending, correct?
Absolutely. And I might add, I think a lot of times people don't think about this, but the refunding is, the reissuance is usually a taxable exchange. So it's also possible that the bondholder or the lender could recognize gain or loss on the reissuance as well.
Okay. Well, this is very helpful, Matthew. I think the bottom line for everybody out there is please don't hesitate to give us a call if you're considering making some changes to any of your tax exempt bond documents. Certainly want to thank Christina and Matthew for taking part in this. Thank you all for listening. If anybody has any further questions, feel free to contact any of the three of us, and you can find us all at our website at www.dorsey.com. I would also just mention quickly that any particular matters regarding COVID-19, you can also find those types of issues on the Dorsey website at www.dorsey.com, and just go to the COVID-19 portion of the website. Thank you very much.